Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Hernan Diaz, and he is a Pulitzer Prize finalist, and his brand new novel is called Trust. This is his second offering, following up In the Distance. And I got to ask you, Hernan, before we get into Trust, In the Distance, you published that thing, it was that novel, it was a self-published deal, yet it got the attention of the Pulitzer people, and that's got to be a huge rush for you. But what was your publicity like? Because you did that all on your own, and all of a sudden you got noticed.
Oh, hi, Ben. A pleasure to be on with you. I think, like, as a small correction, it wasn't self-published. It was published by Coffee House Press, which is a great independent publishing house out of Minneapolis, and they have, like, one day a year where you can send your unsolicited submissions to a slush pile, which I did, and it got picked up, and then everything you just said happened, which was very disorienting. But I just wanted to give Coffee House Press a shout-out because they're awesome.
Sure, I've dealt with Coffee House Press before, and I know they publish a lot of independent works, and so let's get into Trust. Now, as I read the book Trust, I kept having that thought in my mind of when somebody tells you, a couple tells you about their divorce, there's his story, there's her story, and then there's the truth. And so that mantra kept going through my head as I read this book, but that's kind of how you set this up. So can you explain the different points of view that you have in this novel to tell this story?
Oh, yeah, sure. So there are the way I think about it is there are four documents that make up the entire novel, and these documents live in different layers of reality within the book. An example would be the first document you find is a whole novel, a novel within the novel. So that's a fiction within the fiction. But then you find, quote-unquote, real-life accounts of pretty much the same fact, but based or told from or by the real characters the novel was based on. So what I was interested in is, you mentioned the divorce example, which is really great. I hadn't thought of it that way. What I was thinking more of is how we come to accept certain facts as historical realities when, indeed, they have been the result of ideological manipulations. Like, historians tell us all the time that so many segments of history that we have come to accept, should be revised for obvious ideological reasons. We have a million examples of this, right? And yet, over and over again, we also trust, no pun intended, it's just unavoidable, we also trust a number of documents as readers, right? We enter into contracts as readers by which we accept the veracity of certain texts. So I had four versions just to show the different kinds of, like, terms and condition or fine print that we accept when we read, and that's I think at the core of the book to a certain extent.
Well, introduce us to the character Andrew Bevel, because that's a fascinating character.
Andrew Bevel is an American plutocrat. He is probably the wealthiest man in the world at the time when the novel takes place, which is around the crash. I didn't want to write about someone merely rich. I wanted to write about stratospheric wealth. I wanted to write about extreme and utter privilege and what happens around that world and inside that world. So he comes from old New York money. He didn't make his money on his own, which is, to me, very important. And I think Andrew Bevel is an example of, this big American myth about the great man, and I use the word deliberately, man, who pulls himself up by his bootstraps and through his great ingenuity and hard work makes a great fortune. We all know that's a lie, and we have plenty of current examples of fraudsters who claim that sort of thing. And this big lie, this big myth around the self-made man, also implies the silencing of the people on whose shoulders he stands. So I wanted also to give voice to those who have been excluded from these narratives, who are mostly women. Like, there are no women in narratives of wealth in the United States, in history or in fiction. Like, they've been completely erased. So Andrew Bevel is sort of this titan under which these sort of anonymous or deleted voices are, and I want you to give those voices a place in this story, and they're front and center here.
When you write a novel that's really the same story, but each layer gets added on something new, do you run the risk as a novelist of giving away too much with one version of the story such that the suspense disappears, that the reader will get bored?
Oh, man, that was a big challenge. Of course, you have to be mindful of that at all times. And I think although it is, to a large extent, the same story told from four different points of view, it's also true that the voices are so different. Like, I had style guides for each voice. So you do feel really that you're entering a totally different universe in each, I hope, in each one of these four books. And also, the timelines are different. They're written at different moments in history. Like, say, the third book is written in 1985. The first book is written in 1937. So obviously, that would make a big difference, right, in terms of her perspective and so on and so forth. There is also differences in point of view. You know, you have omniscient narrators, you have a personal journal, which is, of course, very sort of, it's a strong first person, so it's totally different. And also, you mentioned these repetition or the risk of being repetitious, rather, and that's something that I sort of embraced and played with. I plan to, if you read the book, you'll see that many of these fictional authors plagiarize from one another, right? And they lift little passages here and there from one another. So this is one of the many ways in which the reader is enlisted as a detective, in a way, a textual detective, and they can spot how each author influences the other. And I think that's part of the fun of reading the book, I hope.
I'm chatting with Ernan Diaz about his brand new novel, Trust. It is available everywhere. Ernan, something else that I noticed is that when you use voices as the narrator for documents that were written in the 30s versus the 80s, you change the voice to sound like how people would talk in those different generations. And so how mindful of that were you that you, I mean, you can write something now, but you can tell that it's written now versus when you read something that's written in the 30s, sometimes it's painfully obvious because people spoke differently then.
Yeah, well, that comes from being, in part, the first answer is being a voracious reader, you know, and like 3 years before even Trust was, you know, a thing in my mind, you know, I read most of Henry James' novels, most of Edith Wharton's work, and, you know, I love literature of the turn of the century, 19th to 20th. So that is kind of a register that I know well as a reader. Other registers were newer to me. For instance, I was mentioning the 1985 section that is written by this woman who's the daughter of an Italian immigrant, but she, you know, she becomes a secretary, which is a way in which women entered the white collar labor force in the 20s and 30s. And could hope to ascend into the middle class without marrying into it. And she does just that and becomes a very successful writer in her own right. And I thought of, you know, I wanted sort of a new journalism voice for her. And that's something that I knew superficially, and I had to, you know, take a deep dive and read a lot of new journalism. And, you know, Lillian Ross and Joan Didion are very strong models for her kind of prose. And then for the memoir written by this tycoon, Andrew Bevel, you know, it was written during the Trump years, so I had a very good example of a blowhard, insufferable, you know, self-aggrandizing man to draw from. But I also read a ton of memoirs written by, in quotes, great men from that time, you know, and it's just incredible, just the entitlement in those books and the certainty that they deserve to be heard, you know, the narratives of their immaculate, flawless lives is of relevance to all of us. And then for the final section, which is a personal diary written by Andrew Bevel's wife, Mildred, you know, she has a very, you know, keen, sharp mind, and it's really into sort of avant-garde art and high modernism of the time. This is the early 30s, right? So it's the heyday of high modernism. So I gave her a very sort of lyrical tone, but it's also kind of philosophical in its own way, and very intimate. And for that, I read a lot of journals written by women, a lot of philosophy of the time, and just prose in general, which is also, I'm drawn to that period as well as a reader. So that was a pleasure to write.
Did you write the novel in a linear fashion as we see it on the paper, or did you go back and forth between sections?
No, I didn't. I am a linear writer. Like, I usually write in the order you read things. So let me tell you how I did this. I first wrote the novel within the novel, which is the first thing you read in the book. And I did that because I had to teach myself what the story was. And the novel within the novel contains the whole story, albeit in a highly distorted, warped kind of way. So I did that. Then the second part I wrote was the third document in the novel, written by this woman who is an author, the daughter of the Italian immigrant, because she also retells the entire story from her perspective, but also looking at her own career. It's a very, very, very different book. And then I wrote the first, the two, like, primary documents, which is Andrew Bevel's memoir and last, Mildred Bevel's journal, which is a very personal text for me, that last bit, the personal journal. It's, I don't know, I feel very exposed in that particular text. It's, so that was the order.
There are different news items going on at the time. You touch on prohibition and obviously the stock market crash, and Andrew Bevel sold short and actually made money in the crash. But when you did that, did you consult old newspapers and news journals to get the time and sense right of what would be on people's minds?
Oh, man, that's a really great question. I the way in which I work, and I come from academia, so I have sort of training in archival work, but more than reading sort of history books, I like to work with primary sources, which is documents from the time, right, rather than history books dealing with those documents. So I got a fellowship at the New York Public Library, so I had access to, whole collections of Forbes magazine, Fortune magazine, from the 20s and 30s, and other periodicals of the time. So I read those, for New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and so on and so forth. And there are direct quotes inside the book as well. And also, since we're on this topic, I also read, I used collections, private collections, of sort of wives of real industrialists and tycoons from the time. And I read their journals, and I went through their papers and their correspondence. And that was very illuminating and very heartbreaking. Sort of the picture they painted of their life and their loneliness and their suffocation. That was a big part of the process. And it was also heartbreaking to see how neglected, for the most part, these documents are by these women. Like, nobody looks at them, and they've been untouched for a century.
Since this is your sophomore effort at publishing a novel, or at least your sophomore novel that you've published, the first one's always written in a bubble. Nobody expects anything. It kind of takes the world by storm. All of a sudden now, you're known, and so people have an expectation of you. What's that like, and as far as you write and when you submit that thing to the publisher?
It's someplace in your mind. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say, I'm just a pure artist, and it's not a consideration. It is. It is a consideration that I very much try to suppress. In the end, you live with that, and you debate with that pressure in your head, and you try to deal with it the best you can. But in the end, what I can tell you is, I wrote exactly the book that I wanted to write. It didn't conform to anything or any idea of what I thought, whatever, the market would be, or, you know, or even my publisher, which in this case is Riverhead, which is a major publisher. You know, they gave me total freedom. There were no compromises at all, at all. This is exactly the book that I wanted to publish, that I wrote, and that they accepted. And of course, there was editorial work, but this is the book I wanted to write, and I hope I can. I think I will stay the course in that regard.
All right. Well, this novel is called Trust. It is the latest by Hernán Díaz. It is available everywhere. Go pick it up. You will not be disappointed. Hernán, just a fantastic novel. I loved it, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it so much. This has been a pleasure.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.